This is Brian Meador from East Carolina University. You are listening to the Sports Objective, the official, unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Welcome into the Sports Objective as we have another week. We've made it without getting fired, and very happy about that. How you doing, Kyle Barber?
Well, Dave, it's just Wednesday, so there's one more work day for me, perhaps two for you, so don't speak too soon.
All right, yeah, that's a whole other show, as they say. Bubba Rosenbaum, before I get in trouble, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. It'd be hard for me to get fired in the summer. I'd have to do something really foolish. But
well, you are on a podcast, Bubba.
Exactly. But yeah, I'm sure I could stick my foot in my mouth some way, but I'm enjoying some time at the beach down here at Oak Island. So on island time, as they say, picking up a pizza at the moment. Hope you guys are doing well.
Doing well. And those of you that are wondering, why did we start this podcast? Our first guest is one of my inspirations to go out on my own and do my own thing. And that's David Glenn from The David Glenn Show. Formally, and hopefully at some point we can get him back on some kind of broadcasting, but that's his choice. How are you, sir?
I am doing great, Dave. Great to be with you all again.
No doubt. There's so many topics we can talk about. I feel like it's the David Glenn Show. I don't know where you want to start first, but I guess we can start with our Pirates losing in Vanderbilt. We were very hurt about that. And one of the questions I have, and Bubba said, don't dwell on it, but I'm not going to dwell on it, I promise, but your former pitcher at the big leagues, as far as I know, college ball. What are your thoughts as a pitcher? I have to ask this question about the strike
Dave
zone.
Pitched in the big league? Did you pitch in the big leagues?
No, I did. I pitched into my 20s, but I was not good enough to play NCAA level baseball. I was kind of the summer league pitcher, Babe Ruth league, and on up. But I pitched for 20 years and. My heart dies on a night where you can't get a fair shake from the home plate umpire. And I was a guy who didn't throw the ball very hard. So I had to kind of work the black, as they say. And if I didn't get that low and away strike as a left-handed pitcher to right-handed batters, I was in for a long, long day. I do agree with the premise that if a guy is consistent behind home plate, you can live with imperfections, right? Like if he gets the same pitch wrong all the time and the same pitch right all the time, you kind of adjust, like that's your job. But not just the Pirates this year, but I saw it happen elsewhere. There's a couple of Major League Baseball umpires that I cringe when I see them behind home plate. So you just hope it doesn't become one of the factors to decide a series or a game. But getting these guys out is hard, and sometimes the home plate umpire, I guess the batters complain about them as well, but I'm usually thinking about it from the pitcher's perspective.
Do you know Jim Ross is?
Yeah, yeah.
Wrestling announcer.
Yeah, barbecue and wrestling.
That's right. Yeah. On his podcast, he talked about, you know, coming up before he, you know, he's been broadcasting so long, but at one point he was a wrestling referee, and he also did football and basketball refereeing at the high school level. And he was speaking on his podcast about maybe it was 2 years ago at this point about how bad officiating is getting at all levels, particularly at the high school level. But then he also talked about college and NFL, and he said, you know, you don't see anybody getting into officiating. It's almost like, I don't want to use this term. It's not the term I'm looking for, but you'll understand it. It's almost incestuous, where it's fathers and sons and uncles and brothers, and nobody new is getting into it. They're, you know, so eventually the quality of people that are officiating isn't as good because not as many people are getting into it. And eventually they may all be replaced by robots. But I thought that was interesting from JR's standpoint a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think a lot of the viral videos we see from youth leagues, where I just saw one within the last week where 5 to 7 year olds were playing a sport and parents ran on the field and basically physically confronted the umpire or the referee. And when enough people who may be thinking about it see stories like that, I think it just gives them a disincentive, especially how do you get to the highest level? You start at lower levels, right?
Right.
In anything that you do. And if you start kind of getting the faucet down to a drip at the really youth levels where you might not be making but $7.50 an hour, it's worth it taking the heat if you're Cowboy Joe West in Major League Baseball, right? Because yeah. Your salary at this point is a whole lot more than 95% of those people in the stands. But if you're just some young person contemplating it as a career path, you're not going to take mommies and daddies screaming at you abusively for $7.50 an hour. And if you give up on it at that stage of your life, you're probably not going to stay in the pipeline long enough, you know, to feed those higher levels.
Yep.
I know that our local level for baseball with the Tar Heel League, it's like $80 a game is what they're getting, something like that. So that's that's about an hour's worth of work. But I know there is also, if you factor in...
You mean like Little League, they're getting $80 a game?
Somewhere in that neighborhood, yeah.
Holy crap, that's not bad.
Okay, a three-hour game, time to the ballpark, time home from the ballpark, you're probably down to $20 an hour there, but that's still better than I thought.
Well, that depends on which league you're doing, right? Because you could be doing a league where... they may be volunteer. There's some that are volunteer. There's some. The one that I'm talking about is one of the best ones as far as the Little League is concerned. But you're right, though. There's some that are volunteer and some that are next to nothing. So for sure, that's I have no plans ever to be. I don't care. I'll work really bad jobs before I go to be an umpire official. I don't want that pressure. One question I have as far as in Pirate Nation is concerned, as you probably know, Cliff Godwin is up for potentially two jobs, definitely LSU at this point. The two jobs that he's known to have said to go leave the Pirates for are LSU and Ole Miss. And one is open right now.
Yeah, and to make that more clear, Dave, what you're saying is supposedly people have said that Cliff said he would consider leaving ECU for two jobs, and those jobs are LSU and Ole Miss. And LSU is supposedly interviewing him, and they're also interviewing Ole Miss's head coach. So if LSU doesn't hire Cliff,
right,
and they hire Ole Miss's head coach, then Ole Miss becomes open, and they may try to hire Cliff.
Right. So that's one thing I would have asked you if you knew anything about it. Obviously, if you're John Gilbert, you're the AD, how do you keep Cliff Godwin with that? It's looking at LSU is offering $1.2 million.
Well, I don't think you can. The bottom line is, we all know that Power 5 schools have a lot more money to throw around than Group of 5 schools, generally speaking. But when you add that personal element where Coach Godwin has said or implied that those two places are special to him for reasons that are personal to him, I think it is a compliment to ECU baseball that he would leave for only two jobs, right? I mean, Roy Williams left Kansas in basketball, which is one of the most prestigious programs in the history of the sport, because the one and only one college school that could come calling, in his case, his alma mater, did come calling. And he actually turned Carolina down the first time to stay at Kansas before he took the job. So every coach either knows, you know, Jim Boeheim has known for decades that he will retire, maybe even die, as the Syracuse basketball coach, right? Now that he's in his later 70s, I think. Most have a short list, and I'd say those who don't have a short list, most of those have a long list of places they would leave their current positions for, right? It's known as a nomadic existence because there are only so many Coach K was going to retire at Duke and Roy Williams is going to retire at Carolina. There are only so many of those. Cliff Godwin having that very, very short list of places he would leave for is impressive and a compliment to the Pirates. But it is a scary time to be an ECU baseball fan because everybody knows he's the right man for that job. Everybody, I think, believes in their heart that he would come through on his promise to get the Pirates to the College World Series with enough time to do it. But given what you guys just laid out on the landscape, man, dominoes fall in funny ways on the coaching carousel, and it's a scary time to be a Pirate baseball fan.
DG, this is a question you'll probably be able to answer for me that nobody's really been able to tell me. I had heard at one point in time that the UNC system only allows you to sign coaches to 5-year contracts. Is that correct?
I don't believe that's true. I do believe there was something along those lines, maybe when the state legislature got involved because of some big coaching buyouts. But I think there are coaches beyond 5 years right now as we speak at public universities. So that law or policy has changed over the years, and I don't believe it's in place right now.
I mean, to me, that's the only thing you could do. You're not going to match your money. But I think you could offer him unbelievable job security with maybe, I don't know if you want to go lifetime contract, but why not offer him a 10-year deal with an increase every year over the next, you know, he's already got, I think, 3 years or 4 years left on his contract.
So through
25. Okay. So he's got 4 years left. So you expand it out to 2030. With an increase each year. I mean, you can't match LSU money, but I mean, look, Cliff goes to LSU, he has one bad season, he might be gone. Whereas at East Carolina, he could be here as long as he wants.
That's the way to do it, and that's the standard way schools have tried. It occasionally works, right? I mean, you know, Mark Few has stayed at Gonzaga forever. And there are other examples of that in men's basketball, which I think of most frequently. But it's not easy. And you guys know the deal. You're thinking of pulling the levers in all the right ways to try to get Cliff to stay. But if in his heart he knows he would go, there's really, at some point, almost nothing you can do.
Well, another thing, DG, is the very fact that money is not – he turned down a lot of money for – I know, but Mississippi State came after him. He's had Alabama after 2016. He's had a few big coaching jobs, and obviously SEC, which he knows very well, coaching at LSU and Ole Miss right before he came to us. But for me, there's a couple things that are missing right now for the administration, and I'm not the athletic director. I'm not trying to be the athletic director. But the two things he's mentioned very consistently, number one is facilities that he wants that he hasn't gotten. I'm just being straight. The second thing is how much he loves his assistant coaches. They did give them a raise last year. So maybe I would give the coaches more money. The other thing that comes to mind is I don't know how you do it, but whenever we're allowed to have that third assistant being paid, that we'll make that commitment to him and say, we promise you that we'll give you the salary for the third assistant coach. The other thing eventually that's going to happen, I think, is we're at 11.7 for scholarships for baseball. I think that'll be increased. Maybe you could say we'll promise you that we'll come up with money if it's 15 or 20 scholarships. I don't know how many they'll increase that by, but maybe you could throw in stuff like that that right now you're not having to pay for.
Yeah, and there are examples of stuff like that working. You know, Bob McKillop has been a very well-respected coach at Davidson. He has had opportunities to leave Davidson many times. He is universally respected. At some point, it of course, most people want to make more money, but there is something special about staying at a school that is so personally important to you. There is something special. If Cliff Godwin continued to get, you mentioned the assistant raises, he knows the backdrop to some of this, right? ECU is among the many schools that has been in such desperate financial straits. They have had to discuss cutting sports entirely, right? So it's not like you're across the bargaining table with somebody who has the proverbial pot of gold and they're just too greedy to throw you enough golden nuggets. This is a tricky situation where ECU's athletic department has been in financial distress. So I think it is meaningful to him with every new thing they come to the table with. I just take him at his word when he says, you know, there's a reason that LSU is important to him, including his time there. And it has to be considered among the better college baseball jobs in the entire
country. I think it's the best job in America.
Yeah.
I really do.
How many people would say no to Alabama football? How many people would say no to Duke or Carolina basketball? You know, it does happen, but it's hard to say no.
Yeah, and you might not get the opportunity to say no. I'm forgetting Ole Miss's coach's name right now.
Bianco.
Mike Bianco may get the opportunity. Leaving Ole Miss for LSU, you talk about a controversial decision. Then would he want to go to Ole Miss? Who knows? I do think you got to make some kind of offer to Cliff. You got to come up with something. I don't really think more money. I think he's already the highest paid coach in the American in baseball. So I don't know that more money, just straight up more money, because you're not going to match LSU's money is the answer. I think you got to get creative, like we're talking about, come up with a package to offer him. You got to make some sort of effort. Reach out to some Pirate Club members, see what they can do to help kind of offset what LSU is offering. Maybe that guy who decided to pay Dave Hart all that money, so just so he can hire John Gilbert.
$600,000 or $700,000.
It's amazing how those big boosters matter. It's amazing. Every athletic director has that short list in his or her back pocket, and sometimes they can green light things that otherwise just would not happen. Wow. It's one of the great hidden stories in college athletics, because most of those people don't like talking on the record about their ability to give the green light to fire a coach, because they'll help to pay the big buyout. They like to kind of keep it on the down low 99% of the time.
Well, one thing I was telling Dave, DG, is, let's say there was a booster that said, we'll pay Cliff Godwin $1 million a year. We'll make him one of the most high paid baseball coaches in all college baseball at $1 million a year. Some group of five football coaches don't get that much. The problem with that is, if you had a booster to step up and pay that, then you're going to piss off the football coach. I think Mike Houston's making what 1.3.
Yes. With all due respect, and I love Coach Houston dearly, and he's got the program we're going to be talking about. ECU
right,
football.
David, I know what you're going to say is he hasn't won like Cliff has, but it doesn't matter. That program makes way more money than the baseball program.
Not recently, my friend. That's why we're in the financial straits. Not recently.
We're not in the financial straits because the money the football program didn't make. We're in the financial straits because of the idiots that were here before this current administration bankrupted.
That's right. And we had COVID back-to-back.
The football decision of firing Ruffin McNeil and hiring Scotty Montgomery. It's nothing to do with Mike Houston.
I'm not knocking Houston. I'm just saying that in recent times, if you take away COVID, baseball makes money but it does make money where a lot of places it does not make money.
Our TV contract is based on our football, and our TV contract is worth about $6 million a year now. So there you go.
I understand all that. I'm just saying Cliff Godwin has the proof is in the pudding, man. He's until we can in the next, probably not this year, but next year, we'll be talking about a top 25 football team under Coach Houston. I tell you where I became a fan of Mike Houston is the man we have on our show right now. I heard Mike Houston on your show, DG, when he was with Lenore Ryan for what was that, Division II?
Yeah.
That championship, and you had him on, and I was like, man, that guy is a great. You could just listen to him and say he's a great coach. So I've been on the DG. I listened to the DG show. I've been a Mike Houston fan since that very time for a good number of years now. Let's talk. Speaking of coach vacancies that we thought would be a lot longer, but I think Duke had a better plan. I want to get your take because you've been around the ACC since I know 1987. I think if my memory serves me right.
Yeah.
We had recently Mike. Not Mike Houston. We had Matt Doherty on recently, and it was ironic because he was talking about. I want to get your take on this. The reason I'm bringing him up about how a Carolina with a, they thought they had Roy after Guthridge, and you were here during all that time and on the show had your own show, and then it didn't go the way they thought it was. It was all the, and then all of a sudden Matt gets the job, and he said, "Guys, I was hired like what was it, July the 11th," and then he was talking about it on our show recently. And it was funny because I said, man, if Duke ever does this, I hope to God for their sake that they don't have – I had forgotten about that whole coaching carousel. We think we got this guy, and it was like a cattle call. I don't know the appropriate term for it. And then we get the announcement that Coach K is retiring, and then we start hearing sources that John Shire has been with him a number of years. It's going to be the coach in waiting. I said, you know, I know that Coach K was close with Dean Smith towards the end of Dean's life, and they became very close friends. And he saw what Dean went through with all that, and he knew how to handle it because his friend had gone through that, and he didn't want Duke to have to go through that. Is that a fair take?
I think that was kind of one of the cards in the deck with Coach K. I think it starts with the fact, you know, that there are secondary factors for sure, including the changing nature of college basketball and what Coach K did not want to see, et cetera. But it does start with the very basic fact that he turns 75 years old during the upcoming season, right? Only one man in the history of Division I men's basketball and the NBA has been a head coach past his 75th birthday, and his name is Jim Boeheim. That's the only guy ever. So K is going to finish as the second oldest with this one upcoming season. So that is the starting point. Now, are he and Roy Williams tired of transfer circuit? Are they tired of recruiting guys all the way to the point where they say, you know, they're jumping to the G League or some foreign country for that 1 year that they're not eligible for the NBA draft? Are they tired of name, image, likeness and all this stuff that's kind of complicating the recruiting process? Yes. So those are secondary factors. But isn't it fascinating, guys? If you would have told me at any point from 1987 until right now as we speak, hey, DG, there's going to come a time where the Duke and Carolina jobs both come open around the same time and both schools hire somebody who's never been a Division I varsity head coach. Man, if you – I'd have taken long, long odds on that happening. And yet here we are, right? I mean, Hubert Davis gets the job at Carolina. He's almost 20 years older than John Shire is. But the one thing they have in common is that they have never been the head coach at the varsity level. So who would have thought that would happen for two of the most famous programs ever? And the other thing it reminds me of, guys, and just think of our time together. There was a time where Steve Wojciechowski, recently fired at Marquette, was at least one of the top candidates to succeed Coach K someday after playing for him and coaching under him. There was a time, remember, when Chris Collins led Northwestern to the first NCAA tournament in the history of the school. That's a pretty high, right? And Collins, former Duke player, former Duke coach. There was a time where he might have been candidate 1A or 1B or 1C. And I know with absolute certainty that when Jeff Capel took the Pitt job, the idea was absolutely he was going to show that he could run an ACC program and win at least at the level he already won as a head coach at VCU in Oklahoma. And then he would have been ready to jump into Duke whenever Coach K chose to retire. The idea that it's going to a 33-year-old guy who and I respect John Shire a lot, but man, it was 10 years ago, roughly, that we were watching him win the title as a player for Coach K. I mean, that's not that long ago.
2010.
So these guys have their work cut out for them. Y'all know the old cliche, you never want to follow the legend. You want to follow the guy who follows the guy. Well, these guys are following the legends, man, and we'll see how it shakes out. But it's not going to be easy as a first-time head coach.
And don't you think with the coach in waiting too, doesn't it have, speaking of recruiting, they could, if you're up against Duke, you could say, they don't know who they're going to have. They're in the coaching search right now.
Yes.
There's a lot of uncertainty. Now you have certainty.
Uncertainty kills recruiting, period. Uncertainty kills recruiting. And the benefit, I'll tell you the two things, I don't know how well publicized these were or not. The recruiting thing, I think most fans understand, right? If there was – how are you – actually, it's not mere coincidence that Coach K chose when he did earlier this month. It's exactly when you're really ramping up conversations with young men and their families as those guys go into their senior year of high school. That's what this summer is all about. So Coach K knew in the back of his mind that he probably had only 1 year left in him and didn't want to lie to these young people and imply, well, yeah, I'll be your coach for one or two or three or 4 years when he knew he wouldn't be. But the other – so now, as you said, it's certainty. John Shire, somebody who was already participating in that recruiting process as Coach right. K's right-hand man, now he's just the right-hand man who's about to be the big dog. The other timing thing is that Kevin White, the veteran athletic director at Duke, y'all talked about the problems under bad leadership at ECU. Kevin White is universally I know probably a dozen Duke head coaches personally. They all love Kevin White. Kevin White, not long ago, announced that this coming August, he's retiring. He's in his 70s now. If Coach K had not chosen this timetable, can you imagine a young female minority first-time athletic director who's been announced as coach as Kevin White's successor? Can you imagine that one of her first orders of business is finding the successor to Mike Krzyzewski, the winningest coach in the history of D1 basketball? I mean, wow. That would be almost unfair to any athletic director, much less someone in her shoes. So this way, you avoided the uncertainty, and you avoided, you know, pulling the pin out of the grenade and handing it to the new AD. We'll see if it works out, but that was part of the logic behind it.
And by the way, DG, another coach, you know, I'm doing the coaches you know very well tonight. How about the Hurricanes? I know they're disappointed that they didn't make it further, but Brendan Moore, man, I'll tell you what, those guys, you know, he was the guy that I wanted, and I got the coach I wanted for the Hurricanes because I listened to him, another guy that listened a lot on your show. I know y'all are close friends, but he's a guy that could put, well, he might be able to put Kyle and Bubba and I on skates. I don't know how well we would do, but we would definitely play hard for him. I could promise you that. Play hard for him. And three straight playoff appearances. You can say what you want to, but we had those 9 years. That Kyle and Bubba always say, man, we've been a long time without a winning season at ECU. I'm like, be a Hurricanes fan where they make half the teams make the playoffs. Yep. And you have three straight years. And now this team is young. I still think they've got a number of years ahead of them. Where they can make a decent run. I think they're built to make a deep run and win another cup or two with the players we have. What do you think?
I think they have to keep Rod Brind'Amour, of course, and I think they will. It'll be interesting to see how they handle free agency. Dougie Hamilton, their star defenseman, is a free agent. They have a lot of other decisions to make, some large, some small. But I agree with your basic premise that the Canes are in a great place, maybe the greatest place they've ever been, as a franchise that moved here in the 1990s. And it's largely a reflection of the talent and depth that you just described, the head coach, Rod Brind'Amour, who is a friend of mine that you just referred to, and also the owner, Tom Dundon, who took over a few years ago. It was not always the case that there was an owner. Remember a year ago when the Montreal Canadiens threw a huge money offer sheet at Sebastian Aho, the Canes' young Finnish superstar? The Canes have not always had an ownership group that would just write the check, say, the Montreal Canadiens, who are very wealthy, by the way, by hockey standards, are not just going to come here and intimidate me with this money. I mean, Tom Dundon ain't letting that happen. I've gotten to know him pretty well as well. So when you have ownership in a good place and you have head coach in a great place, and you have a lot of returning young talent. You know, Andrei Svechnikov is a free agent, but he's a restricted free agent, which means the Canes control his rights. You know, similarly, they're not going to let somebody just swoop in and get Svech away from the Canes. So I think it's a promising time. You know, I've been a season ticket holder. I've told you guys before. It's the one sport where I've chosen, man, I'm tired of objectivity. I just want to yell and scream and have fun and support a team and, you know, drink beer with my buddies, you know, my seats on the glass. Part of that is I love hockey and I love the Canes, but part of that is that I just feel great about where the franchise is and where it's headed.
No doubt. And are you still going to give us the opportunity where we can show Kyle and Bubba a good time? And
yes.
You have the best, DG has some of the best seats at PNC Arena. And I told them that hockey, NASCAR, baseball are better live, in my opinion. Basketball, and football you can watch all day long. But I think hockey, especially we're talking about now, once you see it live, you're hooked, in my opinion. It was for me back when they first moved to Raleigh. I didn't get a chance to see them in Greensboro. It was that late 90s when I first went to my first NHL game. After that, I was a huge Hurricanes fan.
I agree with you for the most part about the sports that are that much more enjoyable in person. Absolutely. I will show you all a game at some point. It would have happened this season, but for the reduced capacity. Because if you're a season ticket holder, you only got sort of a fraction of the games and only a fraction of the seats. So I'm not sure I took three people to any games this year. Just because, you know, most of the season there were only 2,000 people in the building instead of 18,000 or whatever. So we'll make it happen in one of these, you know, cross your fingers, back to normal type seasons, which actually is not too far away given the way, you know, this season ran long and next season is going to start closer to on time.
No question. Let's talk about the transfer portal we had. Actually, I know there was three guys from the baseball team, including I was disappointed with A.J. Wilson. One, and maybe he was told that he was not going to be a starter for 22. I know he wanted to play a big role next year, but I know Kyle had mentioned pre-show in the green room. We wanted to talk to you about that. Your thoughts on the transfer portal. We've been not too happy, especially with football and even more so with basketball.
Well, we've already seen the massive surge in men's basketball. And part of that, as you guys know, is that the NCAA just recently approved a rule that for every athlete in every sport, you get one transfer, no questions asked, no appeal process. If you want to transfer more than once, there still can be a complication. But we all know that most transfers have required that sit-out year, and that was one of the biggest reasons that not as many people transferred. They just didn't want to miss a game, a season of competition. Oddly enough, when they studied in 2017, 2018, and 2019, so the year before the transfer portal was created, the year it was created, and the year after, oddly enough, in the sport of men's basketball, the number of transfers stayed roughly the same. I wouldn't have guessed that, but it was around 700 or so in 2017, similar number 2018, similar number 2019. Now, fast forward, this new rule is taking effect. COVID, you know, obviously gave everybody a free year of eligibility. The number this year, and this is not just names in the transfer portal in men's basketball, is over 1,600. Now, that doesn't, you're allowed to withdraw and stay at your school. Some people choose to retire and not show up somewhere else. But we know that there is going to be at least a 50% surge from 700 to way beyond 1,000 in a two-year period in men's basketball transfers. So that a lot of people say, oh, transfers compared to 5, 10, 25 years ago. This is a 50% surge compared to 2 years ago. And other sports, of course, are expected to take hold as well. I do think philosophically I see this a little bit differently than you guys. I don't like getting away from watching teammates grow together for 2 or 3 or 4 years. I don't like that aspect of the transfer portal. I do believe that as the economics have grown and a mega million-dollar industry has become a multi-billion-dollar industry, they're wise to look for as many reasons to give more players more freedoms in more ways, in part because the Supreme Court, as we talk right now, is scrutinizing the nature of these relationships and why coaches and ADs and those making a lot of money can jump jobs anytime they want to. But for a long time, there were a lot of restrictions on players jumping to another opportunity. In a way, of course, those coaches are allowed to do.
And to me, it's a simple answer. They're employees, and the other ones are students. Like I said off the air, DG, careful what you ask for. You keep wanting to be treated like an employee, you may get treated like an employee. And when you're not performing, when you're a five-star player coming out of high school, and you, Alabama or whoever signed you, instead of being the number two or the number three running back, they're going to go ahead and just tell you, you know what, why don't you go play at UAB, and we got another five-star we're bringing in. So you got to be careful. Be careful what you ask for. You just might get it.
Some of them say that already happens to a degree because, remember, they don't get 4 or 5 year scholarships in most cases. It's a 1 year renewable scholarship. So they already live in that gray area as students. Some of them leave willfully. Some of them leave because they don't see an avenue to playing time or whatever. And some of them are encouraged to leave. But it's there's no perfect scenario. Either you are preventing students who are kind of the soldiers that are the foot soldiers of this mega billion-dollar industry. Either you're restricting their freedoms economically and choice-wise, or you're creating this roster chaos. And neither of those is all that desirable. But if I have to break the tie, I'm going to break the tie in favor of giving more young people more choices.
Can we start trading? I mean, we got like we got an abundance of riches at tight end, but we could use an offensive lineman, and we could use a blitzing end. A good pass rush defensive end. So if anybody needs a tight end, maybe we could trade one for a good pass rusher. So you know.
That I can promise you would be an unconstitutional rule. that one would not make it. The rest of this, there's a chance that tomorrow the Supreme Court announces a decision on a major NCAA case. You know, the Supreme Court does not take a lot of cases, period. I think it's something like 98 or 99% of all cases, not just sports, but all cases appealed to the Supreme Court are turned down. They don't even review them. It can go a decade or more can go by before the Supreme Court takes an NCAA related case. And there's one that the decision's coming soon, maybe as soon as tomorrow, but certainly within the next month or so. So we've got the transfer craziness, the name, image, likeness craziness, and the Supreme Court case all happening as we speak. So the sports world, the college sports world's going to look different. It's just a matter of how much different.
DG, this just popped in my head as you were talking about transfers and all. So I just thought I would throw this out at you. It's fun. It's not about transfers, but it's college related. Fast forward for about 2 months from now, as we get into a Thursday night in early September. I guess it's about 3 months from now. Wishful thinking. In Charlotte, East Carolina is going to be playing Appalachian State on a neutral site there at Panther Stadium or whatever it's called now. 10 starters coming back on offense and defense for East Carolina and App State. Both have 20 starters back for both teams. Have you ever seen that?
Wow. Not that I can think of. I mean, heck, different schools define a returning starter differently. So I'd have to look at those numbers.
Yeah.
But I cannot think, you know, some people include kickers, which would allow as many as, you know, 24 returning starters, I guess. But others just choose 22. If it's 20 out of 22 for both schools, I'm pretty sure I've never seen that.
But based on Athlon, basing this off of Athlon College Football Preview. The only guy Duke's replacing on offense is their quarterback, or Duke, I'm sorry. Yeah. Appalachian's replacing, yeah. And it's with the Duke transfer. That's where that came from. And for East Carolina, it's Blake Pearl.
Well, the quarterback is a pretty big one, and your audio broke up on me a little bit there. But
for East Carolina, Blake Pearl,
App State is going to be the favorite in that game just because of where they've been lately compared to where ECU has been lately. But hopefully it'll be quality football with that many guys coming back on both sides.
I think it's going to be a great game. I think it's going to be probably as hard-hitting of a football game as you'll ever want to see. The style East Carolina wants to play. And Appalachian State had one of the best rush defenses in America last year. I think it's going to be a low scoring football game, actually.
Well, how do you feel about speaking of the Pirates, we've got Jeff Grammer coming on from New Mexico beat writer. We're going to talk about an ECU transfer coming in that Joe Dooley and the Pirates picked up. He's with the beat writer there with the Albuquerque Journal. But, DG, how about the Pirates on the gridiron? Do you think that we finally get back to a bowl game?
I would guess yes, given Mike Houston's track record, given that number of returning starters, given Holton Ahlers as the trigger man for all of that. I don't know the rest of the AAC off the top of my head the way I'll know them by, you know, say August. But this guy's a proven track record kind of coach. And his players, I think, believe in him and have shown improvement under him, even if it hasn't been as many wins as the Pirate fans would like to see. So I'd say there's a great chance that that bowl hurdle will finally be cleared. It's been a long time for Pirates fans.
6 years, 6 years. In fact, DG, it's finally good that your son, Anthony, has graduated. He went that whole time, right, without going to a bowl game. So
that
he's going to be finally, he's going to be the one of the ones I've been thinking about that they'll finally have that. I went to ECU, but now that I'm a graduate, we finally turned the corner. We're finally going to a bowl. And I think next year they're going to be one of the favorites to win the AAC. I really do. With hoping we'll get another year.
Quite frankly, guys, I think if you look back at last year, we went 3-6, only played 9 games. The Tulsa game was stolen from East Carolina. Yeah, I mean, literally, you don't want to say a game was, but literally that game was stolen. So that's 4 wins right there.
The Navy game.
The Navy game, we just didn't have Holton.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it was stolen from us, too, because we didn't. They wouldn't let our star quarterback play on the
full. Well, it's a little different to me because Temple was in a similar situation. So if you're going to give one, you got to take one. I think we were closer last year than a lot of people realize. Really, we were in every game last year after that Georgia State debacle, with the exception of Cincinnati. I think we're going to have a good football team. I think the schedule is a little daunting. Non-conference with App State, South Carolina, Marshall, and then the conference schedule, the Americans, a very underrated football league. So I think if we don't go to a bowl, it won't be for – we'll be in every football game. It'll be a lot of close losses if we don't go to a bowl.
How far and wide does the Sports Objective reach? Because now that Anthony's a grad, if any of your viewers and listeners want a hardworking, talented, good DNA young ECU grad, he's available.
There you go.
We're worldwide. We're worldwide, DG. Where does he live in these days?
He's still in Greenville because, as a reward for 6 straight dean's lists, and I'm not kidding when I say that, he got 6 straight dean's lists. We promised him we would pay his. He loved living near campus, so I just said, man, as long as you're willing to search for a job while Dad kind of pays the freight, he is still right there on 10th Street until I think like the end of July. So that's where he is. He loves the state of North Carolina. And, of course, his mom is hoping that whatever his job opportunity is not crazy far from us. I'm spending a lot of time in Wilmington teaching at UNC Wilmington, but also a lot of time in Raleigh. So we love – and my daughter's at App State. So your matchup, by the way, is Glenn versus Glenn. I mean, who knows how that's going to go.
I was going to ask you about that.
I think, to her credit, my daughter might have watched more App State football last year than Anthony watched ECU football.
Oh, no.
I hope Anthony doesn't mind me sharing that. But App State did have a very good year. Anthony loves going to the games, and obviously that was complicated last year. He's a proud ECU grad, man. We just delivered some purple and gold stuff to some of our relatives up north. So I just spent about 10 days with my kids, and I'm about to have a dinner with them actually near, assume you guys are in the Greenville area, somewhere near you. We're going to have a little bit of an early Father's Day dinner where I get both of my kids at a restaurant in your neighborhood.
Well, where's it at, DJ? Where's the top secret?
Well, the graduation restaurant was Villa Verde. Really awesome. Nice place, really nice owners, and we had an absolute blast. My son actually asked me to find a place between us. I mean, he didn't want to drive all the way to Raleigh, and my daughter's working, so we couldn't get to Greenville in time. So we actually picked a place in Rocky Mount, which is only like 45 minutes for Anthony and 45 minutes for us. We live up in North Raleigh, so... Oh my gosh, I can't remember. Lou Lou Reba's, I think it's called. It's a really popular place. Some call it the best restaurant in Rocky Mount, and it just happens to be basically 45 minutes for each of us. So, you know, compromise, right? That's how families do their best to get along.
Okay. All right. I am not familiar with Nash County very much, Dave. You worked at the Big Dog. Are you familiar with that restaurant?
That must be relatively new because it's hard to believe, guys, but I have been. That's when I met DG, fall of 2010, actually Christmas of 2010. That's when I met DG. I moved up there. So I've been gone for 11
new.
Years.
Yeah, it's relatively new. Yeah, it's just a different concept. I hope I'm saying the name right, but yeah, we're headed there tomorrow.
All right, and go ahead, Bub. I'm sorry.
We gotta worry about Bubba.
Yeah, we're yeah, we can't. Bubba. That's why we're having trouble with you, Bubba. We couldn't. We haven't been.
That's like C3P Bubba.
Johnny Gardner. I think he's what he's trying to say is that Johnny Gardner's saying Beefmaster and Wilson is a great spot off of 301. I used to live in Wilson. Highly recommend that place.
Yeah, Beefmaster's nothing but ribeyes.
Thank you, Johnny. That is a great, great restaurant for the Glens.
So anyway. I will take Wilson area recommendations because that is really equidistant for Anthony as long as he's in Greenville and us as long as we're up here at North Raleigh.
Yeah, they pretty I'll much give you a tip. They pretty much just do ribeyes is all
yep. If you go there, here's the kicker, Dave. If you go there, it's only got about maybe I think eight tables, roughly.
People tailgate in the parking lot.
If you don't mind
anyway.
Having some, yeah, if you don't mind having some pirate beverages, then you can kind of tailgate there for a while if you want to do that. Or if you definitely want to get a table like right now, if you're like me and you want to eat right now, go at 5 o'clock. And now I've told everybody.
I'm gonna take down all these recommendations, man.
DJ, I got one for you. Next time you go see your daughter at App State, you may have been here. It's pretty popular. They got two locations in Boone or Banner Elk. Take your pick. Peddling Pig. Have you been?
I have not, but it's on my short list.
That's really good.
Fantastic.
I think I made a list of like a top 10. I've had more downtime in the last year, so I've been seeing my kids more often. So I think I'm like halfway through my top 10 Boone area list. So as a thank you for that recommendation, I'll give you a Vidalia right there on King Street.
Okay,
Vidalia. Yeah. I think it's like for those who have been there, it's like the last, if you go down King Street, it is the last part of the commercial stretch before it gets all, you know, residential. But it's worth it. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I've seen that. Another good one in Boone, if you want pizza, Capone's.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Some good bars there, too. I mean, I'm a sucker for a good bar.
Yeah, I love the whole area. I'm a, you know, I all East Carolina, baby. You don't care about App State, but I love that area.
Me, too. It's beautiful. Played golf. Played golf out there, and it was, you know, on a warm part of the year here. It's just perfect in the mountains. I mean, holy cow.
Yep, no doubt.
Well, DG, we obviously, I know that you told us maybe broadcasting is not in your future, but I'll keep my fingers crossed, hoping, like I always say, selfishly, that you'll do that. But whatever you decide to do, we're really proud of you. Thank you so much, as always, for you always are generous with your time, and you're always good to us. And definitely, I know you're on other radio stations and other interviews, so keep up the great work, and hopefully we can have you back on preseason for football. Love to have you back to kind of break some stuff down.
Well, thank you for that. It's always good to be with you guys. I still love being a guest on radio and TV and podcasts, including yours. I can tell you something that's not even public yet. I am going to contribute to WCHL and their accompanying website, chapelboro.com. They're going to announce that tomorrow, I believe. So
here first.
So you guys have that first. And I've got some other things cooking to keep me in the sports media world. I know I'm going to keep teaching at UNC Wilmington. I may teach elsewhere sports media style classes, even some media law, tapping into my legal background. So I'm having fun in academia. I'm having fun on a smaller scale than the last 34 years on the sports media side. But I don't know. You guys know me well enough to know that I have a respect for what you all do. because most listeners think what hosts do is easy. And I'm telling you this, being a guest is fun and fancy free and low key and low stress. And I just look forward to it like I would look forward to a visit with an old friend. Being a host is fun. I mean, I loved what I did the last 21 years. But holy cow, those who do it well know how much work goes into it. So I have double respect for you guys as I appear as your guest because I've been in your shoes so many times.
No doubt. Well, maybe we can get Chancellor Rogers to give you a media job, a media like teaching media law for our comm department. That's so awesome. And maybe the radio stations we're friends with say that you've been on there before. There's numerous ones you've been on. Maybe they'll say, hey, we're going to throw a pile of cash. DG is not going to turn that down.
Well, I'll say this, Dave, and I appreciate you mentioning that. I'm not as expensive as I used to be. I'm more willing to listen with there being not quite as many numbers to the left of the decimal point. So for whatever that's worth, I'm close enough to retirement that I just want to have fun and, you know, have my health insurance paid so that my family is sleeps well at night, those kinds of things. But great to be with you all again. I know you got another guest coming, so I appreciate the quality time as always.
Thanks, DG. No problem, DG. Take care, buddy.
See you guys.
Bye-bye. Be well.
Seems like the Wood Ducks, somebody like that could really benefit from doing something.
Absolutely. That would be a lot of fun. With us right now, we're going to shift gears as far as the Pirates are concerned, and one of the things we were scared about talking about coaches, we were worried back in the springtime if we would have Joe Dooley or not. So we do have Joe Dooley with us right now. We're going to be talking about a pickup that we had. It's actually Vance Jackson Jr., Arkansas grad who transferred. He had 1 year at UConn and two at New Mexico, and he's now selected the Pirates. So with us right now, the beat writer for New Mexico, for the Albuquerque Journal, and that will be Jeff Brammer. How are you, man?
I'm good, guys. Can you hear me all right? Did I hit the unmute? I didn't realize.
Yeah,
I
was you did.
We loud and clear.
I'm doing good, guys. I'm stuck in the back storeroom, as you guys can kind of tell behind me. I'm at the office right now at the newsroom, but I found a nice, quiet place to talk to you guys. And look, man, Vance is the guy I covered for 3 years, really. He was he sat out a year as a transfer. I know you guys were talking about transfers a little while ago, but I like Vance a lot. I think fans are going to like him. He's a confident guy. He's not afraid to shoot the ball. He shoots a lot of outside shots, and that's the good and the bad of what ECU is about to get in Vance Jackson, a 6'9" guy who's shot more threes than twos in his career. Some people really don't like that. He's good at it, though, man. He can shoot. He's a good shooter. So I think you guys are going to like what you get overall. And Vance is a confident guy.
And, Jeff, we desperately – I know Bubba is our numbers guy, stats guy, but 2 years ago especially, if we made two or three more threes in a game, then we win probably a half a dozen more games a couple years ago. I know Bubba's a numbers guy, and I'm not, but off the top of my head, I'm not so sure about last year. We had COVID this past season that really derailed our season. We didn't play for 20-some days. I think in February it was a long time as a basketball fan and someone that loves Coach Dooley so much. But we desperately need people that can shoot a three. So is that something that Pirate Nation can expect from Vance Jackson? He will make a lot of threes?
Yeah, absolutely. He's one of the better shooters I've seen come through here at New Mexico anyway in the past 5 or 6 years. There have been a few better, but he's right up there. When he's in a groove, the scouting report I can give on Vance is this. He is 6'9", he is versatile, probably not quite as athletic as maybe he thought when he went to the SEC for a year. I think his athleticism isn't I think you look at him initially, I think the initial kind of scout that fans might see of him is, wow, this guy, he looks the part. He looks athletic. I think when he mixes it up a little bit, he's not a high flyer. He doesn't like getting in there and mixing it up for the rebounds all that much, but he's good. I mean, that, you know, I say all those things, and those are things that people don't like hearing about a 6'9" guy, but the reality is he can handle the ball a little bit, probably not as a point guard. He's not going to be a point forward type, but he can handle the ball. And like I said, when he gets hot, he had some games, and I can kind of go through some of the highlights of his games when he's at his best. There's a reason Eric Musselman, who coached against Vance for 2 years in the Mountain West, wanted to get him immediately a year ago to go to Arkansas was because when Vance is at his best, and he happened to be against Nevada a couple times and Muscle's coaching there, he looks the part of a guy who might play, in the NBA one day. And then he might go three or four games where if his outside shot isn't falling, he doesn't probably do quite enough to get himself involved. But he's also a veteran of the game right now at this point. He's a fifth-year guy who, he spent 3 years at New Mexico, 1 year at UConn, 1 year at Arkansas. He's about to be a sixth-year guy because of COVID. And on his fourth school, he knows at this point of his college career, if he's going to play and make a little bit of money beyond this year, and he will, but to get a little bit better of a paycheck, he realizes he better start doing some things that maybe are on the negative side of his scouting report, which is he probably needs to rebound a little more. He needs to mix it up inside the arc a little more than he does.
How many points per game did he average at New Mexico the 2 years he was there?
Well, I can tell you
there it is on the screen.
Yeah, so there we go, 11 points and 7 rebounds a game at UNM. There was a stretch. This kind of encapsulates maybe a little bit of the frustration sometimes you'll get with Vance Jackson. There was a stretch in his I pulled it up while I was about to get on the show here, and there was a stretch in 2019 season, that would be his sophomore year, but his third year in college, the first year he played with the Lobos, where he had just gotten off a stretch of like 12 games where he scored in double digits. And then he goes over a 6-game span, 4 points, 5 points, 9 points, 30 points, 8 points, 4 points. So in a 6-game span, he was held under 10 points in five games. And it wasn't that he wasn't shooting. It wasn't that he wasn't getting minutes. He wasn't hurt. He was just inactive. He wasn't finding a way to get involved. And then he had a 30-point game and a loss in the middle there. So he would do that every now and then where he'd kind of disappear for 3 games at a time, and then he'd go for 30, and then he might disappear for a couple games. I think his consistency got a whole lot better his next year, his junior season with UNM. And there were times where, look, the Lobos haven't been very good. They weren't very good in his couple years here, but his third game as a Lobo against an in-state rival, New Mexico State, he went for 27 points. Against Nevada, when Nevada was ranked number 6 in the country and undefeated, they came to Albuquerque, and Vance had one of his best games, as a Lobo, I think. He was the MVP, I think, of that game, the best game maybe of the Paul Weir, the coach that just got fired here at UNM. Might have been one of the best games, probably was the best game of his 4-year tenure here. And he went for 18 points. I think he had like 10 rebounds, 7 assists. So he showed up for the biggest games. In fact, the Mountain West tournament every year is played in Las Vegas, Nevada. And even if he was a slump going into the Mountain West tournament, his sophomore year, he went for 26 in an opening round win against Wyoming, and then 25 in a round 2 loss to Utah State that went on to the NCAA tournament that year. And that year, when he was a sophomore and did those 2 back-to-back games, he became the first player in 21 years of the Mountain West to make the all-conference team without making the semifinals of the tournament. So he proved that he kind of shows up for the big game, and people around the league started calling him Vegas Vance. The problem with Vegas Vance was they didn't play all their games in Vegas. So, I think he's a big game performer. He can show up. If and when ECU needs him to go off, he's very capable. It's those other games that maybe it's not a rival, or it's not that big ranked opponent maybe on the schedule that hopefully he's gotten a little better at showing up for.
Yeah,
and so the thing the Pirates will have is experience that he brings to the table, where it's not like I know that one of the things those of us that are old school love the high school recruits coming in, but this also helps us with the very fact that guy that's had experience coming in, and hey, it's a team sport. There might be a game where he's has 25, but there are other guys that can shoot the rock on the team as well. So maybe that'll be a good complimentary, especially since we lost our star player and Jaden Gardner transferring to UVA.
Well, I think what you hope with a player like Vance is, it sounds like to me, his problem has been inconsistency. So in year 6, he gets that extra year of eligibility. He chooses to go to yet another school. I'm sure what he wants to find is consistency in this extra year so he gets a chance, like you said, to make some money at the next level.
He's a guy, too, that's very capable of passing the ball and getting others involved. if he's not forcing his own shot. Sometimes he tries to shoot himself out of one of those slumps. If he has two or three games where he didn't score a whole lot, he gets frustrated with himself. And you can see it. He wears the emotion on his sleeve, and you'll see it on the court. If things are going good, he'll be yelling at the crowd and you know, trying to get fans up. If things are going bad, though, he'll react after a couple missed shots in a row. What he's probably gotten better at, certainly after his first year at UNM, didn't get a whole lot of minutes last year, obviously, with Muss and Arkansas, but I do still talk to that coaching staff. I think what he's a little better at is recognizing the other ways to get involved. And if that shot's not falling, I do think he's better at getting other players involved. I think he is a very good passer, first of all. So I think that when a defender may start, you know, if they're going to ignore the 6'9" guy's ability to shoot outside, they're going to pay because he can shoot from the outside. If they do start crowding him on the line, he is capable of getting by them a little bit and creating his own shot in the lane. When those two things aren't going, Vance was at his best when he was getting others involved. Like I said, the way he finished that sophomore year when they were calling him Vegas Vance because of his tournament performance, you know, he had, I think I'm looking at it now, 5 assists in both tournament games at the Mountain West tournament, and that's to go along with 25 and 26 points. He also gets to the free throw line a lot. He is a mismatch. I mean, at 6'9", a guy that shoots on the outside, are you going to put your 4 or maybe even your 5 in some cases to go defend him? Probably not, because he is quick enough to blow by a 4 or 5 usually. But if you put a 6'5", you know, wing, or maybe a 6'7" wing even, he's a legit 6'9". He can shoot over them, and he has a quick release. So he is a mismatch problem. Again, when he's at his best, it's when he uses his mismatch to try and get others involved too.
What? Why do you think you mentioned maybe lack of athletics? Lord have mercy, he ain't very athletic. Maybe the reason why he didn't do so well at Arkansas. But you know, when you look at the New Mexico, Mountain West is not a slouch of a basketball league. It's you know, when you want to use that term, group of five. But I don't know how big the step up is in basketball. We're not talking football. I don't know how big the step up is in basketball from the Mountain West to the SEC.
I think the biggest step up was just in terms of facing, like, I think the Mountain West has put a lot of players into the NBA. There's some still playing now. I guess maybe not playing because Kawhi Leonard's from the Mountain West, but he's not playing now because he's hurt. But, you know, the Mountain West has done a good job of putting some really good players into the NBA. I think what the Mountain West in general has, though, is maybe some better basketball players, maybe not as great an athlete. If you put another 6'9 guy on the perimeter to defend him, then he does shut down a little bit if he is quick enough. So in the SEC, you're playing teams that have 6'9 wings that can guard Vance Jackson. Gotcha. And not get blown by. So I think that as long as he has the mismatch, he knows how to exploit it. It's if he faces another really good athlete, he does tend to kind of shut down a little bit. But that said, when I say he doesn't have great athleticism, I think you guys are going to see still, you know, certainly above average athlete. I just don't think he was quite ready to handle some of those wings in the SEC. I will say this too, and if you look at the history of Muss, of Eric Musselman's roster, basically, he's a master of getting transfers. He loads up his roster every year, and then he plays 7 guys. He never goes to the 8th guy. He will shorten it down to a 6-man bench if he can. And he's talked about this. You know, he's on record in articles and podcasts in the past. He said at the college level, you're playing 2 games a week. You're at your peak performance, you know, athletically. He said, there's no reason that I'm going to sit there and try and play 8, 9, 10 guys and keep them all happy when I can win with 6. And they're going to rest up for 3, 4 days later before their next game. So he only plays 6 guys sometimes. It's really easy to get lost in the shuffle with the Eric Musselman kind of roster. So Vance just didn't make the cut. I guess he was probably – you know, at that 8 spot, maybe at that 7, 8 spot. And he played early. If you look at the game log from last year at Arkansas, I think his first game of the season, he was their best player. You know, they were playing probably nobody. I can't remember who, you know, what Division II or really low level Division I team they were playing. But, you know, he was doing pretty good early. But once it kind of started stepping up in competition a little bit, he just didn't make the cut in Musselman's like 6-man rotation.
Gotcha.
And this is from Johnny Gardner, by the way. Jeff, he said, kid showed as a highly rated high school recruit that he can play in the league. No idea what led to the transfer to New Mexico. Put up great numbers there and a good conference by all accounts. Tried to upgrade his prospects with transfer to Arkansas, with a coach to put kids in pro ball, and Musselman found himself with limited minutes, but never showed any bad body language, etc. Is he a kid that has matured both mentally and physically, able to produce at a high level in a conference he has experience in already?
I believe so, man. Like I said, I do think he wears his emotions on his sleeve a little bit. I don't think he had bad body language in terms of, and I did watch a bunch of Arkansas games last year because I do know the coaching staff well, and I follow Vance, but I don't think he showed bad body language in terms of anything you would see on the bench when he wasn't playing. When I say he wears his emotions on the sleeve, it's when he misses a shot. If he's on the court, he'll react a little bit. But yeah, the body language wasn't about not playing so much and stuff like that. He's a guy that I do think understands he can be a valuable piece, a very valuable piece on a college basketball team. And he gets a little frustrated when he's not able to show that. But look, he's a guy that I think I'd be shocked if he first of all, I'd be really shocked if he's not a regular starter. But I'd be shocked if he's not a double-digit scorer next year at ECU. I think last year was more anomaly at Arkansas because Musselman really only plays six guys most of the time, seven maybe. I'd be shocked if Vance doesn't go there and average double figures next year. Maybe not mid-teens or upper teens, but I'll bet you he'll get you 12 a night.
Well, I think, Dooley, I would have to look back, and Johnny and Bubba may be able to help me on this, and Kyle, but I would suspect, if my memory serves me right, it's about, for Dooley, eight or nine guys, something like that, that he plays in a game, somewhere in that neighborhood. So I feel like he'll definitely be an important piece of the puzzle. If not, why would he come to East Carolina if he's not going to get any playing time?
Well, what's interesting with Dooley, too, and I've never met the guy, I've never talked to him, when he left EC the first go-round, he came to New Mexico. He was an assistant with Fran Fraschilla here for 3 years. People in these parts certainly know him. They wanted him as a coach here 4 years ago when they hired Paul Weir, who just got fired. They just did another coaching change here. He was a finalist for the job here then. A lot of people wish he would have gotten it here then. He's a guy that, still very popular in these parts for those that knew him, but it's been a while. I mean, the Mountain West started. The first season of the Mountain West was 99-2000. And that was Fran Fraschilla's first year as a head coach, and he was on that staff. So he broke in the Mountain West, and he was here the entire Fran era, if I'm not mistaken. And very obviously, Fran is still very fond of Joe. And Fran's doing his thing with television now. But Fran's another guy that I've I just talked to earlier this week for an unrelated story. But Fran still thinks very highly of Joe, and Joe's a guy that a lot of people here in New Mexico like.
Well, no doubt about it. He's a guy that eats, sleeps, drinks basketball, and he knows, like, in the state of North Carolina, for example, he's the kind of guy that will know every single high school, every single coach. There's a kid coming out, and he'll give you all the stats. Joe is just one of those guys that recruiting is, for some coaches we've had in the past, was kind of like they were kind of annoyed that they had to recruit. But Joe is someone that's a recruiting warrior, wouldn't you say, guys, Kyle?
Yeah, Joe likes to recruit. I think he likes to recruit and he likes to coach. He likes to develop young men. At Kansas, he was their top recruiter. Definitely something he enjoys.
He's good with the AAU circuit. And I tell you another thing, Jeff, that speaking of the transfer portal, we're hearing that now the coaches, what you have to do, it doesn't matter the sport, you have to have one coach that pretty much is constantly paying attention to the transfer portal. That's their job now. I mean, it's amazing.
There's a school that recently hired somebody whose title, if you look at a lot of basketball rosters now in the coaching staff area, there's different titles kind of being made up for some of these staff positions, special assistant to the head coach, or some of them are director of player development, or whatever the titles that they're adding to some of these staff members. There's somebody now who's in charge. Football's had this for a while, but basketball now actually has an official title of recruiting coordinator that is basically watching the portal year round and just basically monitoring roster. It's a roster management position. I think the title has something to do with roster management, and you have to now. It is, as mentioned earlier in your guys' show, over 1,600 for basketball right now in the transfer portal. I will point out that it's weird. We're talking about Vance Jackson, who's certainly utilized the transfer to his benefit. Some would say maybe it bit him a little bit when he went to Arkansas and didn't get any minutes. But, you know, he's a guy that is going to his fourth school in 6 years, has a college degree, and is going to be his second year into a master's. He's a guy that probably is getting what you're supposed to get out of this college experience. And part of it's because of the transfer opportunity. Now, that doesn't make building a roster for an extended period of time very easy. It probably does hurt the college fan experience. The last really good New Mexico team I covered had a group of 3-4 year starters and a guy that's in the NBA playoffs right now in Tony Snell with the Atlanta Hawks, who left after his junior season. And that was at the time, just in 2013, people were shocked that he was leaving a year early. And, you know, it was that recently that people were still pretty surprised if a player might leave early. And now they're not only leaving early, they're doing it within their own league. And, you know, the Mountain West just this year lifted their in-conference ban on transfers. You can now transfer to another conference league. And I think it's going to happen more and more, but I can tell you there was a recruit just last week here at New Mexico. They're oversigned right now, the basketball team. There was a high school kid out of Arizona who was about to come here and join summer session for June, and he got told by the staff, basically, you know, we think you might want to look elsewhere. And the runoff happens a lot more than people realize. The player always says, you know, mutual agreement when they're leaving, but the runoff does happen more than fans want to talk about because they're loyalties to the team. But I do think that the unfortunate reality is that the transfer for the players is probably the right thing to do. The transfer flexibility is probably the right thing to do because so many of them get run off anyway. I just think that right now Vance is a guy that's utilizing it to his best ability. It probably doesn't look good around college basketball when you see a guy on his fourth team like Vance is. I think ECU is going to enjoy him. You know, I think ECU is really going to enjoy him for a season.
Jeff, switch gears just for a second. Yeah. Before we let you go, how's the Lobos looking this fall?
Well, look, they had a bit of an anomaly kind of season this past year. I mean, they fired the coach, first of all. But they were the only Division I program out of 340 that did play last year. They were not allowed because of the in-state restrictions for COVID in New Mexico. They weren't allowed to practice in the state of New Mexico. Not play a game. They played every game out of state, but they weren't even allowed to practice in Albuquerque.
Wow.
So they did most of their season in Lubbock, Texas, out of a residence inn. They did not have a room big enough to watch game film. So they did game film in the lobby area while people were checking in 15 feet away. They had a couple players quit midseason in January. The reality is that they went to St. George, Utah, Southern Utah, for about a 2-week period where they, in the middle of the season, signed a non-conference contract to play Dixie State in Southern Utah. And it's 2 hours away from Las Vegas. So they knew they were playing UNLV, a 2-game series with UNLV. So what they did was they needed a place to practice and play anyway. They signed, instead of getting money as a road team, like you do in college basketball, instead of doing that, they basically signed a deal to go play Dixie State and get used to their weight room and their gym to practice in for 2 weeks. Then they drove over to play UNLV 2 hours over to Las Vegas, Nevada a couple times. They did that. They played their senior night game in Colorado Springs at Air Force Academy. Their home games were all over, you know, the Southwest last year. So that was a unique kind of circumstance for them. Like I said, that player's quitting in the middle of the season. So they were dead last in the Mountain West. That's a bit of an anomaly. They weren't exactly trending in a great direction before that, but they were uniquely bad last year. They should be a lot better this year. Richard Pitino's 38 and has already put in 8 years in the Big Ten. He did just get fired, but, you know, 8 years in the Big Ten and you're only 38, that's probably a pretty good starting point for a coaching career in the Mountain West. Yeah. It worked before for UNM. They hired a guy named Steve Alford when he was 43, when Iowa ran him off, and he ended up in 6 years here winning 5 championships in the Mountain West. So he did pretty good and parlayed that into a nice little paycheck at UCLA. Didn't work out for him there, but, you know, hiring a young coach from a big conference has worked at UNM before, and they're hoping it does here again. I'll add this, that 4 of the recruits that they've already signed. One is Jamal Mashburn Jr., who followed Pitino from Minnesota.
Wow.
He was a freshman in the Big Ten last year, played behind a guy who was getting a lot of minutes until he got hurt. And then by the end of the year last year, Jamal Mashburn Jr. is one of the best freshmen in the Big Ten. He followed Patino to Albuquerque. Jalen House Jr., or not Jr., Jalen House, the son of Eddie House, who played in the NBA, he transferred from Arizona State. So they got two sons of NBA players that are probably going to be their best two players. And then they got a transfer from Kansas, a 6'10" guy, who I got to watch a little bit yesterday for the first time in person. And he surprised me that he's a little more versatile than I thought. So yeah. they're bringing in some pieces that should help them. You know, their whole starting five next year might be all transfers that came in. So I'm covering a team that's certainly benefiting from this transfer portal.
Richard Pitino, to me, I've made this comments with coaches' sons or guys with famous last names many times over the years. Skip Holtz was here in football several years ago. Richard Pitino is his strength. Are more well served at a New Mexico than they are a Big Ten school. He's going to be able to, and I don't know what his staff looks like, but I bet you it's pretty good. Because of who he is, he's going to be able to put together a hell of a staff. Everybody in the Big Ten has good staffs. Not everybody in the Mountain West does. So he should be able to put together a hell of a staff. His name recognition is going to get him in a lot of kids' ears with that last name, Pitino. Again, you know, the Big Ten, you're gonna get a chance to get big recruits.
Yeah, his Rolodex.
Do what?
Yeah, I was gonna say his Rolodex starts with, you know, Billy Donovan, who he coached with for a while. It's not even just dad; it's you know, a who's who of college basketball coaches. So you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, his director of operations leaves, he can call up, you know, the who's who of around college basketball and say, hey, which one of you guys has a young guy that might be a director of ops I can hire? Exactly. Which one of you guys has an ops guy who's ready to be a good assistant? And he's getting good guys. His three assistants, by the way, all came from power conference schools. A guy from Utah, a guy from Arizona State, and a guy who was at Texas A&M a couple years ago.
Yeah, and that's nothing for Minnesota, but for New Mexico, you know, just like it would be for East Carolina, it's a big deal. And,
absolutely.
He'll do well there. That was a good hire.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, we'll see. But I agree with you. I think that from a starting point, they did what they probably should have done in hiring him, because it's hard to ignore a guy that has 8 years experience in the Big Ten and a couple of really good seasons with that Minnesota team. In fact, this past year at Minnesota, had they not had the injury bug, they were ranked as high as 15 in the country at one point, and they beat Michigan, who was, you know, one of the best teams going into the tournament and all that. So, yeah, I think they'll be good, but we'll see.
Jeff, how can people find your work there in the Albuquerque Journal before we let you go, and your social media? How can we follow you?
So I'm on social media. I'm at Jeff Grammer. I am a journalist who spells both my first and last name wrong, though. So it's G-E-O-F-F, and Grammer is E-R at the end, which any typo I have, believe me, gets pointed out. You don't even know how to spell grammar, so I shouldn't be surprised you screwed that up in the article today. And then the Albuquerque Journal is abqjournal.com/sports will get you to some of my work a little bit quicker, but Twitter's where I'm at all the time. I tweet way too much, so at Jeff Grammer, and that's where you can find most of my stuff.
All right, appreciate the time, and we'll look forward to seeing how obviously New Mexico and how Vance will do with us and Pirate Nation and with Joe Dooley, so and that connection as well. So we'll see how it all plays out. And hard to believe it won't be long, and we'll have football and basketball. They're knocking at the door right now.
I'm looking forward to actually covering some games in my home state this next year. So that'll be nice. And I will be following ECU next year because I'm curious. I want to see what Vance does.
Hey, Jeff, real quick before we go, my buddy James and I are huge, huge Billy the Kid fans. We thought about taking the trip out to New Mexico in the Lincoln County area. Is it worth the trip?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm Southern New Mexico. There's plenty of history down there, man. It's real, man. They love Billy the Kid country. And it's good, man. There's some good stuff down there. Obviously, up here in Albuquerque, about 2 hours north of where the good Billy the Kid stuff, Albuquerque's Breaking Bad land now too. And people here love Breaking Bad. And a lot, you know, I go around the Mountain West sometimes, and people are like, make fun of the Lobos or make, you know, ask me like, oh, you must hate Breaking Bad. No, I love it, man. We're an outlaw state. We love being known for Billy the Kid, and then for the chemistry teacher meth cook in Breaking Bad. So we love it, man.
Good deal.
Yeah, no doubt. Great show, and definitely great history there with Billy the Kid. So you can't go wrong. Appreciate your time, man, a lot. And we'll look at your stuff. We love to keep up with obviously journalists and folks in the media. So appreciate it very much. And Maybe we can have you back on during basketball season too. That'll be cool. Interesting to see how the Lobos do.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks, man. Enjoyed it. All right. Jeff Grammer there. Appreciate him from the Albuquerque Journal. And we'll see, guys, how Vance Jackson does. It's going to be a lot of fun. And tell you what, Kyle, it's going to be great to see. We had one coaching. You're wondering how if, Coach Dooley would stay with us. He did. Unfortunately, we lost Coach Rock, Steve Rockerford, but I understand why he went to Texas A&M. And certainly with Coach Dooley, we want to see a post-COVID season, what that looks like. With the Pirates started off great, and then COVID just killed our season there in, what was that, late January, early February, I guess. So we'll see how that all transpires, certainly, definitely in the fall. But we have football that we're going to have, and I know there's going to be a lot of great storylines for football. Do you have any before we go, my friend?
Things that you're curious about? Is that Bubba saying something?
No, I don't think so.
I thought I heard Bubba talk. Okay. No, just be interested to see how things play out with Cliff. Everybody, I'm sure, is keeping their eye on that. And hopefully he'll remain a Pirate if he leaves for – if he does take the LSU job, then, you know, you got to thank him on the way out. And then you got to regroup and figure out who we're going to hire as our next head coach. I hopefully it won't come to that. Hopefully he'll decide he wants to remain a Pirate, and we can put something together for him that'll be appealing enough to him to keep him here in Greenville. And time will tell that tale.
Well, the great thing about Cliff Godwin, he already has a lot of experience. And guess what, Kyle? I mean, it's amazing. But when you look at how much experience he already has as an assistant and as a head coach with East Carolina, the guy is only 43 years old. And the good news is there's a lot of years ahead of him as far as coaching. It's not like he's 60, 65, where he would only have a handful of years left. He's got a lot of years left. And so certainly we want to make sure that we're going to do everything, I'm sure, possible that we can. And I hope that between LSU nor Ole Miss comes a calling as far as hiring him. But if they do, we appreciate Coach very much for everything. We've gone from a I'll say this, and then we'll move on. We've gone from a regional team. That's right, Bubba. Thank you. He also turned down A&M. I was going to talk about that earlier at the Greenville Regional. A group of A&M folks came up to talk to him. And, you know, think about A&M, how much money they have and all the resources they have. It's another SEC school. And the takeaway I have from it, number one, is it says a lot that the SEC teams and programs are coming after our coach. It's also saying a lot so far. He's turned a few down, and we'll see about the two that he would definitely leave the school for. It looks like if that'll play out, but good luck to, we'll see how that plays out, and hopefully we can keep him. Hey, Kyle, also want to remind fans, we're going to be talking to defensive coordinator for the Pirates and the Gridiron in football. We're going to be talking to Blake Harrell. And
you were about to do it, weren't you?
Yeah, I was about to do it. I joke about it so much. Blake Harrell, I know his real name, but that's a whole other show. We're going to be talking to him certainly next week, and all kinds of cool stuff that we'll have on next week. We're working on that right now, and I appreciate Bubba working hard. Kyle, thanks to you, my friend. Thanks to DG and Jeff for coming on, and we'll have another great show. And it's hard to believe we won't have extra innings this week, but we'll have another great show in a few days. Do you have anything before we go, Kyle?
Fresh out. Looking forward to talking to Coach Harrell next week. Didn't realize we were having him on, so that excites me. I always love to talk Pirate football. Thought in a very tough situation last year, he did a good job. So now that he's got a spring under his belt and some changes on staff, I think we could have a pretty damn good defense this year.
I'm a defensive guy. I love the defense, and I think our defense definitely will be as good as 2015. I think we'll do very well. And like I said, I'm going with 7-5 for the wins. We'll look at that even more and closer as we get to the beginning of the season, certainly in August. Bubba, do you have anything before we go?
Can you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yes, we got you, Pineapple.
Of course. Now the service comes through that the show's over. But
we missed you, man.
Really enjoyed the conversation there that you had with Jeff Grammer. some good insight as far as Vance Jackson Jr. And I'll tell you what, guys, when I saw his film, I mean, it's one of those things on the surface, somebody would just glance at it, oh, he only averaged 3.8 points and 2 rebounds at Arkansas or whatever it was. Well, if you watch his film and saw what he did at New Mexico, who has a very proud basketball tradition, and then his freshman year, before he transferred to New Mexico, he was at UConn, and during that year at UConn, he was an all AAC rookie performer. So that speaks to the caliber of player that he is. And then, you know, coming out of high school, he was the consensus top 50 or 60 recruit in America.
Yeah, it's a good pickup for us. And again, nice that he can shoot the three, and sounds like he's tricky, but you know what? It's just like coaches, players also are people, don't always fit in at a job, right? This is a job, and they don't always fit in at a job, but they move across the street or a different job, different state, whatever, and they're a star. So let's hope that that's the case with Vance Jackson Jr. And I know Joe Dooley knows talent when he sees it. So we'll definitely, I think the Pirates are going to be a lot better in basketball, and because we don't have to worry about COVID come November, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. And, something else I was telling Johnny Gardner when we were discussing, the Vance Jackson commitment, according to Johnny, he's already gotten the paperwork signed and, signed, sealed, and delivered. So that's excellent news. And because this just broke here a couple of days ago, I believe it was Monday when I was on my way down. But in addition to him, you have Boston College transfer Winston Tabbs. And if you haven't seen his film, check it out.
It's really good, man.
Between the two of them, I tell you what, it's going to be a must-see TV must-see in person. It's because both of them, they're very exciting to watch.
And let's not – I mean, I'm not –
You get the pieces around Jaden to make Jaden more successful, and he decides to leave.
Well, that's what I'm saying, man.
By the way, Jessica was just singing, "This is the podcast that never ends."
Well, we had
go to bed, Jessica.
Yeah, exactly. We had
what was it?
Go to bed. We love you, Jessica. Yeah.
Dave said he loved you.
Just kidding.
We're working on wrapping things up, and certainly we'll be on the next handful of days as it's kind of our summertime shows, and we'll have a lot of cool stuff, right, Bubba?
Yeah, you already mentioned the conversation we have headed your way with Blake Harrell, defensive coordinator for the Pirates, and we'll have that for you. We'll be recording that next Tuesday. So if you have some questions, that will be a morning interview. So between now and next Tuesday at 11 a.m., send us your questions about the Pirate defense. And we'll select a few of those to go along with our own. And that should be a heck of a conversation. Really looking forward to the progress that defense will make this year. Because you saw it as the last season went on, especially out there in Tulsa, where they really put the clamps on that offense in the first half.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. And we're gonna do much better, I promise. All right, for everybody here at the Sports Objective, thank you to David Glenn, formerly of the David Glenn Show, now the Athletic and teaching at Wilmington and other places. Want to thank Jeff Grammer, beat writer for the Albuquerque Journal. Thanks, Kyle. Thanks, Bubba. Until next time, you've been watching and listening to The Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates.
Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Udon Cheek, assistant track and field coach at East Carolina University. You are plugged into the Sports Objective podcast. If you are a fan, you are plugged into the right place. And if you're really a fan, you will share that link. My heart is purple and gold. I'm a pirate down to my soul. And I don't back down, not at all. Find out when the cannons explode. Boom!